News, World News This Week. I'm John Grimes, ABC News. Listen.
Breathe, five lips, no new taxes.
Mr. President, read our lips. Democrats will not initiate any new taxes.
The problem to date is still not a problem of revenues, but of expenditures.
It's the worst flooding in my lifetime.
One out of every 100 Americans is a weekly user of cocaine.
In a moment, the people and stories that made this week's World News.
College was a challenge, but you made it. If your future needs to include more than just a job, here's a career option you should consider. The United States Navy needs dedicated men and women to be its managers and leaders. These Navy officers provide the professional, scientific, and technical skills demanded by the wide variety of careers found in today's Navy. Navy officers work in a broad array of fields: nuclear energy, computer science, electronics, operations management. You'll also find medical professionals, lawyers, clergy, aviators, and other specialists proudly wearing the Navy blue and gold. Put your college education to work as you carry on a proud tradition. Become a Navy officer. Contact your local Navy officer recruiter or call toll-free 1-800-327-NAVY. That's 1-800-327-NAVY. Remember, it's your Navy. A public service message from the U.S. Navy.
Breathe, five lips, no new taxes.
This could be the week when the rallying cry of George Bush's 1988 election victory comes back to haunt him. For the first time in a long time, the president and congressional leaders seemed ready to face the enormous national budget deficit. Last Sunday evening at what was billed as a White House seminar on Theodore Roosevelt, Mr. Bush surprised the leaders of the House and Senate by inviting them to his living quarters just to talk things over, he said. And what did they talk about? The federal budget. Leaders of both parties are alarmed because experts now believe Uncle Sam will have to cut his budget by as much as $100 billion to meet Graham Rudman targets next year. Add to that the fact that every American now living, young and old, rich and poor, now owes more than $40,000 toward the federal debt. And, well, as ABC's Vic Ratner reports, the T-word is beginning to creep into the political vocabulary.
Nobody here on Capitol Hill ever uses the word taxes when they can avoid it. Listen to Republican leader Robert Dole never use that T-word while talking today about a possible tax hike and spending cut deal between the president and Congress.
If we do it and do it fairly quickly and could complete our action on all this before the August recess, it would seem to me that the American people would have an opportunity to understand that we did do the right thing for the right reasons.
Both Senator Dole and Democratic leader George Mitchell plan to meet with their colleagues before further meetings with the president. Vic Ratner, ABC News at the Capitol.
The Democrats understood that Mr. Bush is at least willing to talk about taxes.
We accepted the president's invitation. It was reaffirmed by all concerned that the discussions would begin without preconditions of any kind. There are no preconditions. All matters will be the subject of discussion at the meetings.
Senate Majority Leader George Mitchell was joined by Minority Leader Bob Dole in urging his colleagues to keep all avenues open.
Let's not lock ourselves in. Let's give the president a chance if you're a Republican. And if you're a Democrat, let's give the Democratic leadership a chance.
But the mere mention of possible new taxes prompted a lot of congressional lip reading. Democratic Representative Charles Schumer of New York.
Mr. President, read our lips. Democrats will not initiate any new taxes.
Republican Senator William Roth of Delaware.
I have a message for the president. Read my lips. Keep the campaign promise. And make no mistake, Congress will use higher taxes for higher spending.
But according to Senate Minority Whip Alan Simpson of Wyoming, taxes are indeed on the menu.
A value-added tax is being discussed. It wasn't before. These other things, they're all sorts of user fees, revenue enhancers, the whole works, and no one is going to be able to say that the Republican Party didn't meet its singular difference between the Democratic Party, and that is no new taxes.
But wait a minute. How about the other side of the budget? How about government spending? Can the budget situation be improved by reducing federal spending? Senator Malcolm Wallop of Wyoming thinks it can.
The problem to date is still not a problem of revenues, but of expenditures.
And Congressman John Kyle of Arizona said he doesn't think President Bush will actually approve any taxes anyway.
The president hasn't said he's for taxes. This is the hope of liberal Democrats. It's not President George Bush. Matter of fact, I think the president feels about taxes a lot like he feels about broccoli. You can put it on the table in front of him, but he's not going to eat it.
So far in this story about taxes, we've heard only from politicians. How about the public? Alan Keyes is president of an organization called Citizens Against Government Waste.
I and the 350,000 members of Citizens Against Government Waste are outraged at the thought that the president and the Congress would even consider tax increases at this time.
And David Keating of the National Taxpayers Union thinks Uncle Sam has plenty of room to trim spending.
A good first step would be for Congress and the high-ranking executives to repeal that 40% pay raise that they'll wind up getting in January. I don't see how the public can stomach new taxes when they know members of Congress are going to be paid 40% more next year than they were paid last year.
Two final words on taxes before we move on. At week's end, President Bush urged everyone not to predict what he'll do.
People can talk all day long, pointing prematurely to discussion of one subject or another. And I'll simply repeat that I have made this proposal that we meet with no conditions, and that's exactly the way it's going to be.
Predictions? These two people in St. Louis read the president's lips this week, and they saw the T word coming out clearly.
I think he's backing off, and I just feel like he hasn't lived up to his promises.
My thoughts are that he is, in fact, going back on his promise and calling it something different, but that it's important that he go back on his promise and that we reduce the deficit.
It's the worst flooding in my lifetime.
Governor Bill Clinton was talking about his home state of Arkansas, but he might as well have been talking about any part of the southern plains. Relentless rains filled streams like the Red River and the Trinity River to the tops of the levees, and then some. Civil Defense Director John Martin of Marshall County, Oklahoma, surveyed Lake Texoma.
We have approximately 83 homes that are in or underwater, and we've had a lot of efforts to try to save these homes by our local rural fire departments who have done a tremendous job evacuating and trying to sandbag and protect people's property.
Across the lake in Denison, Texas, Jerry Leatherwood, who works for the Army Corps of Engineers, said the water level was nearly 4 feet above the spillway of Denison Dam.
All of our marinas on the lake are flooded. All of our boat ramps, they're all underwater. All of our core facilities, campgrounds, and so forth are all underwater. They're all closed.
In North Little Rock, Arkansas, Mayor Patrick Hayes.
We've got a water wall of about 4 to 5 feet in the deepest parts that we're holding back outside of the residential area that we're protecting.
In Long Lake, Texas, south of Dallas, Bill Walters of the Red Cross managed an emergency shelter at a Methodist church campground.
One shelteree here says that he called his wife one morning early, and he says, "Honey, go out and see how high the water is." And she says, "I don't have to. I'm standing in it."
Robbie Kuntz of Slack Harbor, Arkansas, says there's too much water.
I love to fish, and I love the waterfront. But I had no idea it was going to be this much waterfront.
With the rising water came danger of drowning, of course, but also the kind of danger caused by insects and snakes driven to higher ground. Judge Dempsey Henley of Liberty County, Texas, urged people to be sensible and evacuate when orders come.
We're asking everyone to certainly use common sense and get out of there while they can.
In North Little Rock, Michael Pratt lives on high ground, and he became the neighborhood evacuation center.
Two families are kinfolks. And one family down the street, they're almost like kinfolks. They're personal friends. We've known them for about 14 years. And so we just told them just to come on.
In the northern plains, the problem was just the opposite. Native Americans gathered in Mandan, North Dakota, to perform a traditional rain dance. And the further west you went, the drier it got. Jim Mullane of the San Francisco Water Department says the city had to order water restrictions.
We're saying you can't hose down your driveway. We are not saying you can't water your lawn. We're just asking you to be a little more cautious and conservative about the whole thing.
In the Pacific Northwest, officials did not look kindly on a proposal to solve California's water problems with Oregon's rivers. Oregon Attorney General Dave Frohmeyer says the state's farmers need all their water.
They need the water for irrigation there, and there's more need now than there is water. So
the notion that just because the Columbia is the nation's fourth largest river, that it has a surplus of water is a myth, and it's one that we ought to just shoot down at the earliest possible moment.
And as the grass died slowly in the west, Walter Barrows of Santa Barbara, California, offered a solution to the problem of brown lawns. Paint them green.
It's a temporary stopgap until we either find water or decide that we can no longer grow grass in this beautiful Southern California desert.
And then again, you could move to Michigan or Wisconsin, where it snowed this week. Michigan Highway Patrol Sergeant James Zabochnik.
It's not unusual to get a snowfall, but to get this much, it is.
Another kind of snow, the street nicknamed for cocaine, alarmed the nation this week. The Senate Judiciary Committee released a report indicating there are nearly three times as many hardcore cocaine users in the United States than the federal government has admitted. How many? Delaware Senator Joseph Biden.
Most significantly, the report finds that there are almost 2,200,000 hardcore cocaine addicts in this country. Put another way, our report finds that one out of every 100 Americans is a weekly user of cocaine.
And Senator Biden says cocaine costs all of us.
For those who wonder about the connection between cocaine and crime, there is a dramatic finding. One in every five persons arrested in this country, one in every five, for any crime, is a hardcore cocaine addict.
Responding to the report, National Drug Policy Director William Bennett insisted the cocaine problem is resolving itself.
I will say today that I think that the addiction problem has peaked. I think we will see signs over the next few months of a decline in addiction. It may well happen sooner, I'm saying, than what we predict in the strategy. And if that occurs, that's just fine.
Education Secretary Laura Cavazos this week unveiled a model drug education curriculum for the nation's schools.
The model rests on a core theme of responsibility for oneself and the community and helps students understand that drug use harms not only the user, but society as well. It shows how to infuse the prevention message throughout the curriculum, and it includes lesson plans for each age group, information for teachers, and tips for involving parents and the community.
But Joel Moskowitz, professor of education at the University of California, says drug education in school is probably not the answer to cocaine.
There's little evidence to date that would stand up to scrutiny to suggest that drug education is keeping kids away from drugs in the long term.
Congressman Charles Rangel, chairman of the House Committee on Narcotics Abuse and Control, agreed.
I am scared to death. And I don't need, coming from my community, a model plan to give to the principal, nor do I need a handbook. I need to believe that we are involved in war and that every cabinet official has a game plan, a blueprint, and they're not going to ask to be carrying this war alone.
And there was bad news on the cocaine front for the embattled mayor of Washington, Marion Barry. ABC's Beverly Lumpkin reports.
Marion Barry was charged with six new misdemeanor counts involving the possession and use of drugs. Barry was indicted earlier this year on three felony counts of lying to the grand jury and five misdemeanor drug charges. Among the new charges today is a conspiracy count, alleging that from the fall of 1984 until January of this year, Barry repeatedly acquired cocaine and crack from more than 10 other co-conspirators. Barry's trial on the original charges is currently set to begin June 4th. Some delay is now anticipated due to the new indictment. Beverly Lumpkin, ABC News, at the Federal Courthouse in Washington.
This week, ABC News reported that agents of the Colombian drug cartels had sought to buy U.S. Stinger missiles in Florida, perhaps to be used to shoot down government helicopters on anti-cocaine duty. In Tampa, U.S. Customs agent Bonnie Tischler says the drug smugglers were thwarted.
This time, the agencies were successful. This time, the agencies disrupted the cartel's plans. This time, instead of stingers, the cartel was stung.
A fierce fire forced a Navy ship, the USS Cunningham, into its home port this week. Yet another accident that has the Navy's top brass worried about safety aboard the fleet. Pentagon spokesman Bob Hall told reporters what happened.
The fire lasted approximately 2 hours. All the injured crewmen have been medevaced off the ship by helicopter and taken to Centara Norfolk General Hospital and Portsmouth Naval Hospital in Norfolk.
The violence-marred Greyhound bus strike continued this week, despite a news conference proclamation by Greyhound Chairman Fred Curry.
Essentially for Greyhound Lines, the recent labor interruption is over.
But Curry's claim was disputed by Nick Nichols, spokesman for the striking drivers.
I can only say that Mr. Curry's claim that the Greyhound strike is over is like Napoleon claiming victory at Waterloo. It's a ridiculous and false statement to make.
This week in the Soviet Union, Latvia and Estonia took steps to join Lithuania in seeking their independence. The presidents of the three Baltic republics met in Tallinn, Estonia, to map strategy. ABC's Ellen Crosby has more from Moscow.
Leaders of Estonia, Lithuania, and Latvia met in the Estonian capital of Tallinn for a historic one-day summit to forge a united front in their mutual drive for independence. The meeting ended with an agreement to revive the 1934 Baltic Council, a consultative body which coordinated the policies of the three states before the Soviet Union annexed them in 1940. They also seek joint negotiations with Moscow, which strongly opposes their actions. The three asked Presidents Gorbachev and Bush for support at the Superpower Summit meeting in Washington later this month. Ellen Crosby, ABC News, Moscow.
And former Lebanon hostage Frank Reed came home to the United States this week. In Arlington, Virginia, Reed told reporters how he felt when he found out there are still more hostages yet to be freed.
I became very, very angry and embarrassed, and angry I still am.
Reed says he was treated very cruelly while in captivity.
One pig of a man who constantly haggled me and raggled me, broke my ribs, kicked my ribs on the right side, and I managed to somehow push them back, lie on my back, and they went back on there. It doesn't look as nice.
And Reed says it's true he brought a message from his captors to President Bush.
I don't know what it was because it was a sealed envelope and I don't peek.
The House this week passed a bill intended to guarantee every American parent who leaves work temporarily to attend to the birth of a child that there will be a job waiting for him or her. Representative Marge Rockema of New Jersey says the bill serves everyone's best interest.
In a day and age when the majority of American families need two paychecks, not to get rich, but just to keep their heads above water and make ends meet, it is inconceivable that we do not have a minimum guarantee of job security when medical emergency strikes.
The family leave bill faces an uncertain future in the Senate, and even if it passes there, President Bush has indicated he will veto it. Elsewhere in Washington, a House Small Business Subcommittee held hearings this week on the multi-billion dollar diet industry. And the nation's recording industry told the nation it will start putting labels on records indicating they contain strong language or references to subjects such as drug use and suicide. Jay Berman, president of the Recording Industry Association of America, said the labels will be in stores soon.
The logo will be in use in approximately 6 to 8 weeks, and therefore can be expected to be seen in retail stores on July releases.
Elections in several parts of the country this week. In Ohio, Congressman Donald Lukens lost his primary bid for re-election. Lukens has been convicted on charges relating to having sex with a teenaged girl. And in North Carolina, Henry Merritt Stenhouse lost in a primary for a congressional seat. Stenhouse is 100 years old. And we asked him why he was seeking public office when he might be enjoying his retirement.
You don't ever stop working. Don't ever stop having something, not what you want to do, but what you have to do.
It was getting crowded at the top of the world. First to climb Mount Everest this week were mountaineers from the International Peace Climb, a team representing the United States, the Soviet Union, and China. We asked Warren Thompson, who was halfway up the mountain in Tibet and who spoke for the team, how they felt.
Ecstatic is probably a good description. We had a lot of shouting for joy down here at base, and the guys up on the summit were hugging each other and slapping each other on the back, and I think everybody was just extremely excited.
And at week's end, Peter Hillary reached the top of the world's highest mountain. In 1953, his father, Sir Edmund Hillary, became the first person to ever climb Mount Everest. Sir Edmund talked with his son by radio.
Congratulations to you all. I think everybody here is delighted at your success. It's been a bit of a struggle over the years, but we're thrilled to bits that you finally are standing on top of the old mountain.
In a moment, award-winning bad writing when World News This Week continues.
No.
Hey, Vince, what are you doing?
I'm looking through the worn ads, little buddy.
For what? We've already got great jobs as crash dummies.
Not for much longer, Lair.
Huh?
Haven't you heard? Oh, here's one. Scarecrow must light the outdoors. Now, that's...
Vince, what are you talking about?
I'm talking about the new crash protection systems, like your airbags, your automatic belts.
Yeah?
Well, now that the new cars come with them, people are safe. And you and me, we're going to be pounding that pavement. Of course, we're used to that, huh?
Vince, you got it all wrong.
I do?
Yeah. Things like airbags can't do the whole job.
Yeah.
People always have to buckle their safety belts.
Yeah.
That's the only way to be really safe.
You mean we still have years of head-ons ahead of us?
That's right, amigo. Huh? Until everyone buckles up, our jobs are intact. Although we won't be.
That is great news. Hey, but look here, I thought this job sounded interesting. Look.
Wanted, attack dog training dummy?
You know how I love animals.
This message is brought to you by the Ad Council and the Department of Transportation.
Dolores breezed along the surface of her life like a flat stone, forever skipping along smooth water, rippling reality sporadically, but oblivious to it consistently, until she finally lost momentum, sank, and due to an overdose of fluoride as a child, which caused her to suffer from chronic apathy, doomed herself to lie forever on the floor of her life, as useless as an appendix, and as lonely as a 500-pound barbell in a steroid-free fitness center. No, your radio hasn't suddenly switched itself to that other station nobody listens to. That 80-word sentence, written by Linda Vernon of Newark, California, won the 9th annual Bulwer Lytton Award this year. Now, that means it is the single worst piece of writing in the English language this year, the single most turgid sentence among 10,000 entries, judged by the contest sponsors at San Jose State University. There was stiff competition for the Bad Writing Award. Consider this gem by Kenneth Leffler of Falls Church, Virginia, which won in the historical category. Paul von Hindenburg, only 1 month old and wrapped in a blue blanket, rested peacefully in his cradle, oblivious to the tragedy that would one day befall a dirigible to be named after him. Now, that's bad writing. The Bulwer Lytton Awards are named after 19th century British author Edward Bulwer Lytton, who wrote some of the most turgid English prose ever quoted by a dog. Perhaps his most famous line begins, "It was a dark and stormy night." This year's contest drew entries from all parts of the United States, as well as such places as Kuwait, Saudi Arabia, Switzerland, Austria, New Zealand, and Australia, and perhaps Saturn. Richard Garrett of Pittsburgh won the Bulwer Lytton Award in Bad Science Fiction Writing with this gem. Far out in the backwaters of the unfashionable end of the western spiral arm of the galaxy lies a small, unregarded yellow sun. And orbiting this at a distance of roughly 899,010,000 miles is the flesh-frozen body of Farley Wilsputz, Jr. And boy, is there an interesting story of how he came to be a component of Saturn's ring system. If you can write a worse sentence than that, there may be a Bulwer Lytton Award in your future, if you can wait that long. And those are the people and stories that made World News This Week. World News This Week was written and produced by Stu Chamberlain. Engineering by Don Bailey and Joanne Brancali. I'm John Grimes, ABC News, New York. World News This Week is a presentation of ABC News.